Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, we have got another Q&A from our YouTube community members. If you want to be a part of future Q&As, because not only do we do them here on the podcast, we also post many of them on our YouTube channel. Please go subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. Keep an eye on that community tab because that's where I do the post asking for questions. And it's a lot of fun. Everybody seems to enjoy these. I enjoy doing them. And hey, don't forget, go sign up and become a member of this podcast if you are not already. It's ROFpodcast.com. You get the full show twice a week, access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire podcast archives. It is a phenomenal deal, and it helps keep us going here. So without any further ado, let's jump right in to today's questions. We'll start off with a question from Robin Wood, who asks, how do you maintain your sanity as the husband of a Florida teacher? I left public education because I could not get help with induction. I got told I could not grade homework. I could not teach any kind of discipline. Oh, and the class sizes I had were insane. You don't have to share, but I was in Duval County with average class size of 28. I went private sector and never went back. That is a great question. And to be honest, you know, it is difficult with the atmosphere down here in the state of Florida, the massive attacks we have on teachers coming from Republicans, like not just the constituents, but obviously from the lawmakers as well. And those are the ones that are the most terrifying. Teachers are pulling books off their classroom shelves to avoid being hit with felony charges from Ron DeSantis's administration, because it is now illegal to have a book, like a regular book in your classroom, that has not been pre-approved by a certified librarian or media specialist. If you are caught with one, you will face felony charges here in the state of Florida. So it is terrifying. It's terrifying thinking that my wife might get hauled out in handcuffs because she didn't realize a kid in her classroom had a book that wasn't supposed to be there, allegedly. And you know, I've been very open before. She has had issues. She's been accused of pushing critical race theory, all because she had one single book that was about immigrants coming into the United States. It was a fiction book. And it told the story of two brothers that came into the United States seeking a better life for themselves. It's actually a very pro-America book, but parents got pissed, caused a whole backlash, you know, investigation, all kinds of stuff. It was terrible. So I do worry, because all it takes is one right-wing idiot, which is what this area is filled with, to go in there, file a complaint because they don't understand the subject matter. By the way, my wife is totally vindicated in this. The county agreed. They stood up for her. But it still caused a big thing because one parent caused a big stink about all of this based on something they didn't even understand. And yes, they did use the words critical race theory in the complaint. So it's terrifying. It's terrifying, again, to think that my wife could be jailed for this. It's also terrifying just in general with the state of guns across the country. I have had to sit down with my children and explain to them what to do if someone with a gun enters their school. Those are conversations we shouldn't have to have with our kids. They've gone through active shooter training. My wife has gone through the faculty active shooter training, which includes, by the way, barring the doors and not letting any screaming students in. You have to leave them out there in the hallway with the shooter. It's horrifying. Every aspect of being a teacher in the state of Florida right now is terrifying. And I will say, another teacher at my wife's school, a conservative, had a conservative book in her classroom by a well-known conservative author. It was in the teacher, it was on display, I believe, for Parents Night. The About Me, Things I Like, the teacher set up a little table of things she likes. That book was there. Parent made a complaint, caused a big stink. So it does go both ways. And it's not fair to any of these teachers, right, left, center, doesn't matter. They're under attack, and Ron DeSantis is leading that attack. Our next question comes from Kelly's Homemade Kitchen. Kelly's Homemade Kitchen asks, Farron, in your opinion, what do you think the odds are of Trump actually getting elected in 24? And furthermore, what do you think the likelihood of Kari Lake or Marjorie Taylor Greene being his running mate? Is he going to get elected in 2024? I don't believe so. I think that's a little far-fetched. I mean, look, crazier things have happened, like him getting elected in 2016. So, look, I can't say for certain that he's not going to get elected, but I do think the odds of him getting elected are exceptionally low, especially because you still have a majority of people in this country that despise him. Right. They have not forgotten about January 6th. They have not forgotten about the Access Hollywood tape. They have not forgotten about the document scandal, the fake elector scandal, the ongoing tax problems in the state of New York, his horrible tweets, his horrible personality, his personal insults, all of that, his terrible policies, the trade war, the border wall, all of it. They remember it. They hate it. They don't want to vote for that again. Having said that, do I think Donald Trump could easily cruise to victory in the Republican primary and be the nominee in 2024? Oh, heck yeah. I absolutely believe that is possible, especially if he's going to go up against weak people like Nikki Haley, who announced her presidential bid this week at, 6:48 a.m. on Valentine's Day. Off to a terrible start, Nikki Haley. And if those are the kinds of people that Trump is up against, like, he's going to win no matter what. The primary. So he's got weak competition right now. Of course, Republican Senator Tim Scott is expected to make an announcement pretty soon. And most people are like, who is that? So Tim Scott's got a lot of work to do to get people to pay attention to him, especially when you've got a guy like Donald Trump out there who's already attacked Nikki Haley. He is trying to do as much preemptive damage to Ron DeSantis as possible. But the running mate thing, I think Trump understands at this point that Marjorie Taylor Greene is also a universally despised figure. So I think he would probably pass on that. I mean, she is loyal to him, loyal to a fault, right? She's been out there attacking Nikki Haley this week for going after Donald Trump. But I think he should be smart enough to understand that that is a, you know, campaign killer. To put Marjorie Taylor Greene on that ticket, to have her go out there and do speeches to a nationwide audience, that's not going to go well at all for him. Kari Lake, on the other hand, is just as extreme as Marjorie Taylor Greene, but not as bonkers, I guess would be the word. I mean, not as openly, publicly bonkers. Kari Lake has said some pretty extreme things. But she presents it in a way, and I'm not trying to really give her credit for this, but Kari Lake can come across as rational, even when she's saying hugely irrational things. Marjorie Taylor Greene can't do that. So Kari Lake would be somebody that I think could be an asset to Donald Trump, a danger to the country, sure, 100%. But she could definitely be an asset to that Trump campaign if he picks her. And let's not forget, she was in Iowa last week. And there's only one reason people go to Iowa. Sorry, people in Iowa, I don't mean any offense to you. But if you're going to Iowa, it's because you want to be on a ticket, either as president or vice president. We know Kari Lake won't run against Trump. So she could be testing the waters, getting some information about whether voters respond positively to her, so that she can pitch herself to Trump later on. Our next question comes from user DJ Bricks, who asks, given that Trump didn't really debate and just insulted the other nominees, do you think that DeSantis could achieve the same result if he follows that playbook? No. Ron DeSantis is a horrible debater. I mean, if Ron DeSantis had to win elections based on debate performance, which he hasn't had to here in the state of Florida, but he never would have become governor in the first place back in 2018. Andrew Gillum wiped the floor with Ron DeSantis in 2018. And then Charlie Crist, who lost by 1.5 million votes, absolutely destroyed DeSantis in their one debate this past year. DeSantis is really, really bad. He has no policies to speak of other than his culture war nonsense. He doesn't know how to address problems. He gets flustered and red-faced when you pull him off script, kind of like Marco Rubio. And Chris Christie dismantled him back in 2016 in the debates. So DeSantis is not a good debater. And when we're looking at a potentially very crowded Republican field for 2024, all of those other Republicans up on stage are going to feel that weakness. And all it takes is for one Chris Christie-like figure, a big bully, and we already know there's one of those in this race, to totally throw DeSantis off his game. Again, Chris Christie did it to Marco Rubio the debates were in 2015, and Rubio really hasn't been the same since. And I think anybody could do that to Ron DeSantis. You know, he's got a very weak record. Even the culture war stuff is not nationally popular. So he doesn't play, I believe, you know, very well beyond the state of Florida. He plays exceptionally well here. But he's not good. He's not good at policy. He's not good at debating. He's not good at talking. He's not good at answering questions. He's a loser who basically failed his way to the top because the Democratic Party here in the state of Florida is really bad. If we had a stronger Democratic Party and, let's face it, better Democratic voters stop putting up weak candidates, we wouldn't even be talking about DeSantis these days because he'd be a nobody sitting in the back of the House of Representatives that nobody even cared about. We have a question here from Catherine Daigle who asks, what would it take to unseal Greenberg's testimony? We know that what a POS Gates is, but we need the facts, and his attitude signals to me is he feels safe. If Trump files can be exposed, why not Greenberg's? More silver spoon justice. Some reports said these files went to Meatball Ron. Why? Was he having relations with underage girls too? What other politicians were Gates and company pimping for? So as we all know, late last week, the DOJ officially said, Matt Gaetz, you're off the hook. But this question, first of all, actually was posted on our site shortly before that news came out that Gaetz wouldn't be charged. But your question remains the same. Where are the files? Joel Greenberg, the disgraced Seminole County former tax collector who was kind of the ringleader of this entire scandal, Matt Gaetz's wingman is what the media has called him. He cooperated for over a year. Over a year! This man was working with prosecutors. He was giving them such good information that they repeatedly delayed his sentencing because what he was giving them was gold. But everything he gave them is under seal. And at the time, the judge agreed at the prosecutor's urging, keep it under seal because we don't want to scare off the targets. We don't want these people to start intimidating witnesses. We don't want them to flee the country. So keep it under seal so they don't know we're going to come after them. And it was widely assumed, obviously, that one of those people was Matt Gaetz. They had his own ex-girlfriend cooperating against him. Like, You don't do that if that man is not a target. And then ultimately the DOJ is like, we can't trust those people. Really? Because you trusted them enough to cut these deals with them and delay their sentencing. I don't buy that for a second. Our DOJ is weak. It is pathetic. It is scared. Because if they had a shred of dignity, charges would have already been filed against Matt Gaetz. But it is what it is. It is what it is. We cannot change that. But what we can get eventually are those unsealed files from Greenberg's cooperation. Let's also not forget, because you mentioned Ron DeSantis in this, there were a total of 5 co-conspirators unnamed in the Greenberg indictment. It was always assumed that one of those 5 was Matt Gaetz. So let's assume one of them was and he's not being charged. There's still 4 others. Nobody else has been charged. Who are the 4 other people? The DOJ said they were co-conspirators. That's how they were listed. Co-conspirators. Who are they? Where are they? Why have they not been charged? Because if you're not going to charge them, there's no reason to keep Greenberg's testimony and cooperation under seal. You said you wanted it sealed because you didn't want your people to flee. You didn't want them to intimidate other witnesses. But if you're not going to charge anything, then why not just release it? Eventually we'll get it. But I'm afraid by that point, the damage will be done. So we need to act now. We need to act fast. We need good people who are good at FOIAing information. Beth Borden and Ken Klippenstein, I'm looking at y'all. Y'all are the best at it. So maybe y'all can get your hands on that and release it to the world, because I think we need to know what Greenberg had to say and why the DOJ decided to do nothing about it after cooperating with him for a year and a half. Here's a user by the name of DV who asks, "Hi, Farron. Love your daily news reports." Well, thank you very much. "Does it boggle your mind how much investigations there are on baby Donald and yet he's not indicted on any of them yet?" Honestly, it really does. Like, any one of these scandals that Donald Trump is involved in would have typically taken the average person, you know, not a politician, not a billionaire, and put you behind bars, and there you stay. Yet for some reason with Donald Trump, it always has to be dragged out. And part of that, of course, is his legal team intentionally dragging these things out. But my God, you look at all of these things and you have to think to yourself, at some point, like, something's going to happen here, right? Like, we're going to get it one day and then never. That day never comes. Now, look, we're looking at a very serious trial coming up for Donald Trump. Not a criminal trial, civil trial. In April with the E. Jean Carroll lawsuit for battery. That's going to happen again in just 2 months. That's a big one. Very important. It may be able to prove that the former president of the United States sexually assaulted somebody in the 1990s, which I kind of think that's a very big deal. But other than that, I mean, we've got the lawsuit, the $250 million lawsuit from New York Attorney General Letitia James. That case is still pending. It's going to go to trial this year as well. So that's going to be a big one. But again, it's just a civil trial. He's not going to jail for that. The state of Georgia, we're still waiting on the actual criminal charges to be filed from that to know who's going to be hit with them. The DOJ right now, the DOJ is involved in 8 different court battles for the Trump investigation that they're conducting. There's 8 court battles, and those court battles include getting people to testify, getting information to, you know, issue warrants, subpoenas, all kinds of things. And Trump's people and his allies, his friends, the people that are being subpoenaed, they're all trying to fight it. So that's tying all that up. So that's part of the reason why the DOJ is so slow on this and why nothing has happened. But I would at least think, like, the document scandal, right? That's pretty cut and dry. Like, you're legally not allowed to have these documents. Your lawyers lied to the federal government in a sworn statement, said you didn't have any, and then we found out you did, and we know you're legally not allowed to have them. There's a very specific law that covers that, the Presidential Records Act. So I don't think you need a 6-month or 12-month investigation into that. You could have looked at it for 20 minutes and said, oh yeah, we're going to file criminal charges. It truly is that easy. It's that easy. You don't need the special prosecutor being distracted by that small scandal when he's trying to work on things like the fake elector scheme, which is a big, you know, across the country, people involved in it, scandal. That one does take a while. The document scandal, you could have had a first-year law student look at that and say, oh yeah, I can craft charges as a potential prosecutor on this. That's easy. Why it hasn't happened, it does boggle my mind, so thank you very much for that question. Our next question here comes from user BlackCover95, who asks, "You and Alex Jones are facing off in a no-holds-barred news-off. How does it go?" Well, if we're talking about news, I win. And if we're actually talking about facts and statistics and things that matter, I win that fight easily. But if we're talking about, you know, it comes to blows, who's going to fight? Alex Jones, he's a big dude, right? He's got a lot on me. I don't think I could physically take Alex Jones. But in a battle of wits, I'm not scared of him at all. Our next question comes from Daniel, CEO, who asks, with all this talk of Republicans trying to cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, etc., what is concerning to me is this. With all the money that has gone into those programs in all these years, where is it going to go if the GOP has their way? It's going to go to tax cuts for the wealthy. It's going to go to the military-industrial complex. It's going to go to tax breaks for corporations. It's going to go to subsidies for corporations. It's going to go everywhere you don't want it to go. It's going to go to the people that already have billions and billions of dollars. That's where the money will go. And meanwhile, the payments for those things, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, those are going to keep coming out of your paychecks. So you're going to keep paying into the programs. And they're just going to take it and do something else with it. That's how that's going to work. That's the way they want to rewrite the laws. Because they don't want to officially kill Social Security. They just want to change it to where they can adjust how much money they spend from it, giving people benefits. They want to adjust that. They want to pay less. But them paying less doesn't change how much you're paying into the program. See, that's where things get a little bit sneaky, and I think that's the part that a lot of the pundits out there in the corporate media, they're not explaining what's actually happening. Republicans don't want to permanently kill Social Security. They want to kill it as we know it, to make it more of a slush fund, a personal piggy bank that they can draw money out of whenever they're a little short on cash to give their friends another tax break. Social Security will remain Social Security. It will just be completely unrecognizable from what it is now. And yes, Rick Scott has that plan to sunset it, which would mean it would expire. But he also tells us, hey, he's totally confident that we're going to pass it again. So, you know, don't worry about that. So who knows? But we have been paying into those programs since the first day we got our paychecks. Unless there's anybody listening to this that started working before the 1940s. You may remember a time when you didn't have that coming out. But I'm pretty sure 100% of you, every paycheck you've ever gotten has had Social Security and Medicare coming out of it. You've been paying into those programs your entire working life. That's your money. You are owed that by the federal government. You sent them that money and they made you a promise. And Republicans are trying to force the federal government to break that promise because they know how much money is sitting there and they want to get it and give it to their wealthy friends. A question from Armando DVR says, hello, Farron. I want to start off by thanking you for the great work. Since I started watching your channel, I stopped watching corporate news. Well, thank you. That's good to hear as well. My question is, what can the Biden administration do to undo some of the damages from the trade war with China? Also, what can the United States do to not depend so much on China for a lot of goods and manufacturing jobs? Armando DVR has just won the award for question of the friggin' year. Thank you. I don't know how many of y'all watch the Ring of Fire YouTube channel every day, but I mention once a week, once every other week at least, that we're still in a trade war with China started by Donald Trump and nobody seems to frickin' care. Like, everybody was so mad about it when Trump did it. And then we all just kind of forgot about it. And then COVID, of course, right? I mean, that you know, kind of did take precedent. We had farmers going into bankruptcy at record rates here in the United States from the trade war. We're paying more for goods here in the United States because of the trade war. And Biden hasn't put an end to it. In fact, in doing more research on it just a day or two ago, turns out he's doubled down on it. He's talked about it, right? They've had discussions in the White House about the trade war, and they've agreed they're not going to do anything about it. And part of the reason, of course, is because they don't know what to do. Just like Donald Trump didn't know what to do. He started it. He had no exit strategy, got us in a quagmire. But the Biden administration has now said it's turned into more of a Cold War, which is a scary thought. So what do we do to fix it, right? That's your question. What do we do to fix it? Well, that's a tough one. Nobody has a clear answer to that. But I think the biggest problem is you've got to rein in the corporations here in the United States. They're the ones who kind of started all of this, right? They're the ones who ship good American jobs overseas. They're the ones who are importing all these goods from China because they can get it cheaper there. We have to make that more expensive for them. But you have to do that in a way that, one, doesn't cause China to escalate and retaliate, and two, you have to do it in a way that doesn't squeeze American workers here at home and consumers. So how do you do it? You threaten the tax breaks. You threaten the subsidies. You threaten the special treatment that corporations have been given by our government, state and federal. You say you send your jobs over there, that's your business, you can do that. We're going to strip you of all your subsidies. You will be paying a 40% income tax on every single dollar that comes into your company. And that's what's going to happen to you. So you're free to ship those jobs overseas if you want. But you're going to lose so much money by doing that, that any savings you may have had will be completely wiped out. You're an American corporation. By God, you're going to act like it. If you think corporate pressure like that doesn't work, this week, Moderna announced that they're not going to go through with their 400% price hike on the COVID vaccine. Do you know why they did that? Because Bernie Sanders threatened to haul their CEO in front of the Senate and make him explain the 400% price hike to the world. And they backed off. They said, okay, you know what? We're not going to do that. So the pressure works. It can work very well. Unfortunately, we don't have enough leaders and fighters in the House and Senate to stand up and fight back against these corporations when they do these things. And again, that's just one small thing we can do with this trade war. Because again, we do want people buying American. We want to support American jobs and American manufacturing and American farmers. But we also have to understand that we cannot just shut our doors and say we're only here. We have to have a good relationship with our trading partners. I mean, that has been a staple of the modernized world for hundreds of years now. You have to have these relationships, but it does have to be more fair. We have to stop the scaremongering about the trade deficit, because the trade deficit, by the way, has actually gotten worse since Donald Trump's trade war. We're importing stuff from China at a higher rate than we were before the trade war started. So the trade war, actually had the opposite effect of what Trump wanted to do. So it's been a disaster from the start. It's a disaster that the Biden administration is still, for some reason, carrying on. And we're the ones, quite literally, paying the price for it. Again, that was question of the year. Thank you very much, Armando. Here's a question from Jason Kluge, who asks, what do you think would be the final straw in moving from Florida? If that happened, where do you think you would move to? My wife insists that we should move to Colorado. So, you know, there's that. The final straw. It's difficult. You know, I've got my family here. I've got my job here. My wife, same thing, family, job, all of that. My kids, their friends, you know, everybody's kind of, you know, social network is here. And it's difficult to just say, you know what, screw it, kids, pack your stuff, we're leaving. But at the same time, the conditions do continue to get worse. And there will come a point, if it continues down this path, where we, my wife and I as a family, have to look at it and say, is it time? Is this state no longer safe for us? You know, if any of my children come out as, you know, LGBTQ, here in the state of Florida, they will be persecuted for that. I'm not going to put them in that kind of danger. So if that is who they are, we're out of here. and I'm going to take them to a state where they will be safer, where they're not passing legislation to intentionally discriminate against them. That for me, I think right now is the line. But I also have a very young daughter. This state and so many other red states across the country are attacking her reproductive freedom. That could be grounds to leave this state. So those are my lines. That's where I stand. And I think that's where a lot of other people stand too. You know, it's bad enough the way things are, and I understand there's already people that are being marginalized and being attacked by the legislation in this state. So it is difficult to have that very selfish, like, well, it doesn't affect me right now, so I don't care. I do care. I talk about it every single week. You know, I want to right these wrongs. I want to get these people out of office and expose how corrupt and horrible and hate-filled they are. So that is where I'm at. It's definitely an option on the table. Don't think that I haven't started looking at houses and property in other states, because I have. So it may not be as far-fetched as I would have once thought. Here's a question from CoolDude8997. It says, what Republicans in Congress do you think actually do good for the nation? None. Not a single damn one of them. And I'm not just saying that as an individual that's like, oh, I'm so tribal, I hate Republicans. I'm saying that as somebody that has been doing this for dang near 20 years, and I'm looking at Congress, I'm looking at these Republicans, I'm looking at the legislation they pass, I'm looking at the public statements that they make. None of them are good. None of them. Not a single one of them. Every now and then, you know, just like the broken clocks, right, twice a day, they'll say something that I agree with. Every now and then, they'll propose one piece of legislation that I agree with. I think Ted Cruz and his push for term limits, that's a great example. Like, hey, I like that. I hate everything else Ted Cruz does, but I like the idea of term limits. Does that make you a good person? No, you're still a piece of crap. And I'm going to keep calling you a piece of crap. I don't like you. I don't like what you've done. I don't like how you're persecuting other individuals and how you support politicians who do the same. Just because we agree on the one thing doesn't mean that I want to hold your hand and say, hey, this is one of the good ones, because you're not. You know, Nikki Haley came out shortly after announcing her run for president. She says, we need mental competency tests for presidential candidates over the age of 75. I agree with that. I actually think we need it for all politicians, regardless of age. But, hey, a start is a start, right? So I'm okay with that. Is she a good person? Hell no, she's not. You look at these other Republicans. Even, you know, last year, when we had Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger coming out, and they're working on the January 6th committee, and they're going after Trump and all his little friends, and still voting with Republicans, you know, 85-90% of the time on horrible legislation. They both voted against, you know, an extra stimulus package during the COVID pandemic. So screw them. None of them are good. We can agree on one or two things, absolutely. But when we disagree on 99.9% of everything else, then yeah, I don't think any of you are good. A question from Renee Maris, my apologies if I've mispronounced that. Why is there silence regarding Mark Meadows and the January 6th investigation at the DOJ? Well, good news. And of course, this question was posed before this news broke. But Mark Meadows has now officially been subpoenaed by the United States Department of Justice. So the silence is broken. Mark Meadows is likely going to face justice. Thank God. But the subpoena is just the beginning. There is going to be a legal challenge to it, because that is what all of Donald Trump's people do. They don't ever want to cooperate. They want to obstruct. They want things to not happen. So Mark Meadows is going to fight this, but this is the dude. Listen, he's been at the heart of all of this. He was the epicenter of that entire scandal. So if they can crack that nut, and I don't mean nutty as in crazy, I just mean, you know, the metaphor, crack the nut. If they can get there, if they can get that information out of him, then at that point, it's full steam ahead straight towards Donald Trump. So there's going to be a fight. They're going to have to take it to court. It could take weeks. It could take months. But he can't fight it forever. And he can't win those fights. I think he knows that. The smartest thing for Mark Meadows to do is to approach the DOJ and say, hey, how about a deal? That's what he needs to do right now. This is a long question, and it's one that I really, really wanted to answer to clear some things up. It's a question from user Zhilong Tay. And the question is this. Again, very long. Bear with me. Hey, Farron, how are you? This is more of a suggestion rather than a question per se. Lately, I've watched two of your America's Lawyer takes on Ukraine with Mike, and well, they were questionable, to say the least. Your opinion that America shouldn't get involved in sending tanks to Ukraine troubled me because the argument given was that it would make the conflict longer and also make America inevitably directly involved eventually. My problem here is that this is a very one-dimensional take that falls right into pro-Russian and MAGA arguments and that ignores the true meaning of the shipment of the tanks, which is providing Ukraine not only with the means of defending its people and territory, but also democracy as an institution itself. So I guess my question here would be, wouldn't it be wise to invest more in progressive foreign policy research and editorial level, or learn from other progressive channels that delve into foreign policy, such as Beau of the Fifth Column, before offering your own takes? You seem to be an awesome progressive voice in America's internal affairs, but your foreign policy understanding could improve. I hope you take this as constructive criticism, as I want nothing but the best for you and your channel. I wish you all the best in reaching those 1 million subscribers. Now listen, I appreciate the way that you framed this. I take exception, however, to the implication that I do not research these things before I say them with regard to foreign policy. That is 100% not the case. I've taken a lot of heat for my position on this particular issue with regard to sending the tanks. My support for Ukraine has not wavered. My insistence that Russia is ruled by a dictatorial madman has also not changed. Vladimir Putin is an evil bastard. And he is the aggressor. He is the one completely in the wrong. And I still maintain that no, we cannot let him just annex Ukraine because he's a madman. That has not changed. And I have made that very clear. And yet I still get people saying, well, clearly you're in the tank for Putin. Not that this question said that, but I get that on Twitter. I get it in emails. Like, nope, that's not at all what I've ever said or what I've ever implied. What I don't like is feeding the military-industrial complex here in the United States, which is what this shipment of tanks is. You know, we send you some of our older stuff, and then we got to turn around, we buy a bunch of new stuff that puts a bunch of money into the pockets of the people who profit off death. I'm never okay with that. Never. Y'all shouldn't be either. I mean, as progressives, aren't we against that? The other thing about the tanks, like, I feel like y'all didn't listen to the rest of the story, is that Ukraine has already said, we're going to need y'all to train us on this. We don't know how to use these things. So what does that mean? It means the United States military either has to go to Ukraine to teach them to use the tanks, or we bring them over here. That is direct United States involvement, folks. That's the slippery slope, and that is what I've said concerns me. Y'all also seem to be missing the point that the ministers in Ukraine also came out after the tanks and said, next, we will likely ask for fighter jets. That's more escalation. That's more money in the pockets of the people who profit off of death. Now, I also fully understand the flip side of this. You know, oh, well, what if we just pack up and don't give them anything and just say, hey, best of luck, Russia kills them, right? And we can't do that either. So as I've repeatedly said, I don't have the answer. Nobody, by the way, has the answers to this. Nobody in progressive media, knows exactly the right thing to do, because this is a complicated situation that requires people that are a hell of a lot smarter than any of us. My suggestion at this point would be for us to combine as a global community and squeeze the hell out of Russia. We do it by cutting them off from the rest of the planet. Now, there's also a downside to doing that. Because those people in Russia, the people who wake up in the morning, they go to their jobs, they come home, they feed their families, they read their kids' bedtime stories, they're the ones who are going to suffer under that. They didn't sign up for this crap that their bloodthirsty dictator is doing either. There's no good outcome. Do y'all understand that? There is no good outcome here. People will continue to die. The only good outcome is if somehow Vladimir Putin keels over from a heart attack right now. Maybe that puts an end to the bloodshed. Maybe that puts an end to this invasion from Russia. So, I don't know. Maybe, you know, whatever, if he's got health problems, maybe he succumbs. But I don't want people to die. I don't like innocent people dying. I'm sorry that that is somehow controversial. I also don't want the United States to have boots on the ground. I have not been, you know, I've not had a problem with sending the aid to Ukraine. It's when the military-industrial complex comes in, pushed by Lindsey Graham, of all people, which y'all all seem to forget, too. He started this with the sending of the tanks. They're doing it because it puts money in their pockets, and then it puts money in the politician pockets from these people to keep doing it. You know, we can't be anti-war and also cheer on the war machine. I stand by what I say. Next question is from Ethan Kiter. Ethan Kiter asks, "Hey, Farron, I love your content and I've been subscribed for about 2 years, so here's the question. I live in a conservative part of Michigan and I was wondering if I should move to a more liberal part of the state like Lansing or Detroit to be around more like-minded people, or should I just bite the bullet and stay where I'm at right now? Regardless, I am looking forward to your response." Interesting question, because, you know, I've had that issue here in Florida, obviously a little blue speck in a giant red state. And it is difficult because, okay, you're talking about just moving from one part of the state to the other. But I've also had these questions from people like, should, you know, progressives leave red states and go move to blue states to be around people? And the knee-jerk reaction is like, yeah, red areas, it sucks when everybody out there disagrees with you and is out to get you. So move to a blue area, get away from these idiots. But then at the same time, there's the other side of it, which is if we leave, we're basically giving them all the power. You know, you, Ethan, with this question, you're just moving from one part of the state to the other, so you're not really, you know, seceding all the power to the Republicans, just maybe in that particular area. But if we had mass, you know, movements of these kinds of people, like from the Democrats leaving the red states, you know, the Republicans leaving the red states, or blue states, excuse me, good grief. All of that together, then we end up even more divided than ever. We need the balance, you know, we need, not necessarily with Republicans, but we need that blue balance in some of these deep red areas, because every now and then it can have an impact. I look at Lauren Boebert's district. It was a Republican plus five district that got more red after her first election, and she still only won by 500 votes. So being a little blue speck in a deep red area, hell, every now and then it can make all the difference in the world. Now, the other side of that is if you are a liberal in a red state and you are being persecuted because of right-wing legislation, or your family is in danger because of right-wing legislation, get the hell out of there. I firmly 100% am in favor of that. But if it's just, I don't like these right wingers over here. They got their Confederate flags on their truck. It annoys me. You can still make a difference in those red areas. So don't give up. I know it's easy to lose hope. I know it's easy to just say, screw it, I'm out. Don't do it. Unless you or your family are being targeted by specific legislation, which, you know, is a lot of women throughout red states, stay where you are unless you're being targeted. Here's a really good one. I just wanted to mention this one real quick from user CW5001, who says, I want to thank you and Mike for bringing up the CPAP recall. I finally got my replacement CPAP machine. I really appreciate you and Mike bringing this to our attention. Thank you for that comment. And that is one thing, you know, that we've kind of done differently here at Ring of Fire compared to most other channels, you know, regardless of political affiliation, is we go after the corporation. We talk about these legal issues. Mike obviously is one of the, you know, prominent, most preeminent trial lawyers in the country. He knows what he's talking about. He's handling these lawsuits. And so it's a lot of fun to get to talk with him about these things and spread the word and get it to an audience that otherwise wouldn't hear it. That has, you know, been our thing since day one. So thank you for those comments. I'm glad you got the new machine. And that's all the time we have this week for the free portion of the Ring of Fire podcast. Members portion coming up in just a moment. And if you want in on that, go sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com.